I'm Susan Saunders, and Lauren Rainson helps us here at WJBC with our forecast. Sunny high 82 today, 81 the high tomorrow with a chance of afternoon and evening showers. Friday, high 80 and no rain expected this weekend. Temperatures in the upper 70s to low 80s. It is going in my diary as the most lovely summer I think I've ever experienced.
I told Kevin that today. I said it reminds two words, or I guess maybe a word and a half came to mind, San Diego.
It's perfect.
That's what they get every day out there.
And that's why they spend millions of dollars to live there, because it is lovely. 75 right now. That's the voice of John Rudy from Kingston Wealth Management. We're joined with Kevin Kingston.
Good morning,
also
Susan.
From Kingston Wealth Management here every Wednesday from 10 to 11. I have to thank you again for inviting Barb Nathan from Westminster Village in last week. Such a great conversation. I was given requests. It's like, you will podcast that, right? I wanted to share that conversation with some other people, so I did. It's up on my Susan Saunders section of the WJBC podcast page. So if you missed last week, you missed a lot, but it's there for you to review. Now, all of our shows, just for future reference, are on KingstonWealthManagement.net.
Yes, that's right. That's exactly right.
But because you're here so often, I didn't have the space to put up every single show, but that one we definitely had to make room for, and it was great. So now we're back to looking at the markets, and can I just skip ahead in markets and ask, has anything really happened in oil to explain the up and down gas prices?
Well, we'll start with your favorite topic, oil, because you know, Kevin, I looked this morning and it was around that 49, call it, shot just
up
shy of
little.
50,
yeah,
up a little bit, but I think one would almost imagine with what's going on right now, we'll talk a little bit more about the other impact that's going on with North Korea and all the saber rattling that's kind of going on. You could almost make the case where oil could start get jittery when you start getting that geopolitical. But right now, it's still maintained itself pretty well.
I would agree with that to an extent, John. I still think our U.S. oil supplies are so strong that, you know, that price is not likely to go dramatically higher. And by the same token, with the Korea-U.S. Tensions, for lack of a better word, you could see that Middle East price come up a bit.
And see, I was thinking maybe it would be more of an influence from Venezuela, because they're having such instability in their government, and they're such a large part of, you know, our oil infrastructure. But it still does not explain how you had less than $2 a gallon in champagne when we were at $2.39 for a moment yesterday.
Yeah, it's really crazy. And it has to do with, Kevin pointed out during the break, it has to do with the supplier. There are different suppliers for different areas, and
can we get the number of your guy?
Yeah, it's I texted my son yesterday because I bought it for $1.94 yesterday afternoon, and I think when I left town it was like $2.39. I think it's come down in that $2.19 range.
Now we're back down. There's just no explanation of it.
But we go back to saying the same thing. Whether you fluctuate 30 to, you know, whatever the price per gallon, even though it's frustrating, even at $2.39, $2.29, call it whatever it is, we are very, very fortunate, Kevin, that we still continue on this trek. And it's really been longer than I ever would have imagined. But I think you make the best point. When you start becoming more energy efficient and energy independent, as the USA has, you're not held hostage like we were two decades ago.
It's made a huge impact.
It really has. I want to skip back a little bit, Kevin, because while we're talking about markets and the effects that the potential conflict, or the potential, because it is a conflict with North Korea right now, it hasn't had a dramatic impact on market movement to date.
No, and the headlines are overblown, John. You would think there was a dramatic movement if you read the headlines.
I saw that.
But the reality is there's been a very slight downward movement in S&P, Dow, NASDAQ, but it is slight. You know, you look at the S&P and Dow, and both of them are off in about 0.25%. I mean, very, very small. And, you know, I'm pleased that it's not more than that, because, I mean, those kind of headlines about tensions between the U.S. and North Korea saying we're going to fire missiles at Guam, I mean, very, very concerning, disturbing, and, you know, that causes fear, and markets don't like uncertainty.
No, they do not. But as far as markets go, let's take a few minutes to talk about that, because you just have to be impressed by the continued performance of many, many companies on the S&P and others.
Through the end of July, John, the S&P was up over 11.5%, approaching 12, you know, currently. So, I mean, that's such a strong year-to-date return.
I know you have a lot of clients, and Susan, we talk about clients who make regular contributions to their 401k plan. I know the people that we see, that you guys talk with, it sort of reaffirms the choices they're making right now to keep going, keep doing that. And we'll talk on the second segment about why that's so important. But there has to be some favorable feelings on the part of folks who have adhered to your advice about hitting those 401k plans pretty hard.
That's right. I mean, you keep putting dollars in, you know, kind of stay the course, and you're definitely getting the benefit of some very positive markets. There was a good Wall Street Journal article I had to check a little bit, Susan, yesterday or the day before, that said everybody's a buy and hold investor for now.
For now.
And, that's exactly right. And now's the time to determine when we see a correction.
Yeah.
We've talked about many times that will happen, where you'll have a 10% or more downturn in markets, and now's the time to decide what you're going to do. You can't wait until that happens. And we talk over and over, John, about the best thing usually is to do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you are still putting money in on 401k or other funds, you know, you're still buying, even if those prices are lower.
Is there a common cause of what begins a market correction? In 2008, we had the credit crisis and the housing bubble burst.
Right.
And that was a culmination of events that some people saw coming, because we know there were
probably
folks that
not.
You know that made money off yeah. of everyone else's downfall. But I didn't know if it was like a jobs yeah. report or corporate earnings, because once one domino falls in that direction, a lot seem to go with them.
It would be a softening in consumer confidence, consumer demand, when you start to see companies not hitting their mark, not making their revenues that they Wall Street believes that they need to make. They start cutting back on staffing. So it's usually a number of things, Kevin, that get these things going. But you can really, I'm always amazed at how many people in the past 6 or 7 years, yeah. Kevin, that we read doom and gloom it.
The most recent downturn would have been 2016 with the Brexit. Now, there's some uncertainty in play when mm-hmm. people tell you, well, you saw that coming. Usually not. You know, it's usually more in that moment. All of a sudden, we knew there's going to be a vote in Europe, and then all of a sudden you've got the British deciding they're going to leave the European Union. You can't predict those things, but that caused a correction mm-hmm. in early 2016. The credit crisis, you could look at and say, well, there was so much mortgage lending that shouldn't have been happening. Maybe we should see that that's going to happen. The reality is very few people knew that was going to happen. And then you look at, John, the tech bubble.
Yeah.
The Fed started raising interest rates repeatedly. You know, I think they did 8 rate hikes.
They sure did.
Back to back.
Yep.
And so you had the tech bubble followed by 9/11 on terrorism on U.S. soil.
Yep.
So those kind of things are usually unpredictable.
You know, Susan, we remind folks all the time. One of the articles I brought with me this morning, Kevin, we've talked about what hedge fund managers that have been bearish, that have been betting on the downside, and many, many of them have been hurt fairly significantly over the last couple of years, and they're starting to see their account balance sizes go down. Some of their folks are losing confidence in their predictions. But therein lies the problem, because I think when you start getting in the prediction business, it just makes you look like a fool. Because, Kevin, I go back to some of those newsletters that we've been pulling out the last couple of years. I mean, it was 3 Septembers ago that on the 12th that was going to be the final of the final. I mean, the end is coming near to the financial markets. And then it just goes on and on. I even heard the former, I think, Greenspan. I mean, he gets on there and talks about, well, I think the bubble's about to burst. Well, wait a minute. We've gone up so doggone high. You know that markets don't go one direction forever. Why even say that? Just because you want to come out and be right?
Even when he was in the chair, he was saying
he was wrong.
Kind of
yeah.
Things.
So, but anyway. Well,
and then I wanted to comment when you mentioned the hedge funds. Your friend Warren Buffett looks like he's going to win his bet.
Yeah.
Nine years ago, he bet the hedge fund industry that the S&P 500 would outperform the hedge funds over a 10-year period, and so far he's way ahead.
He's way ahead.
The hedge funds are up about 22% in the last 9 years, and he's up 86%. The S&P's up 86%.
Now, because sometimes people think we're talking insider baseball when we use all these technical terms that they may just be learning about for the very first time. No. If you are a basic investor into a 401k exclusively and you're picking investment options through your company-provided 401k, are those considered hedge funds that you are sometimes picking? I consider them mutual funds, but there's still a person deciding.
Kevin, you might explain what a hedge fund really does.
In a nutshell, hedge fund managers are trying to beat the markets, and you know they're really very, very active, and sometimes they outperform markets, but as Warren's comment is proving right now, they've actually averaged less than 1%. Those five hedge fund managers that are going up against the S&P 500 in his bet, they've averaged about 1% annualized over the last 9 years.
But so if you were going to invest with a hedge fund manager, you're buying equities of their hedge fund, which can be a conglomeration of other equities.
Well, and here's a little statistic that kind of supports that. The S&P 500, there were 24 stocks in the S&P 500 in 2016 that gained 45% or more for the year. 10 of those are now negative year to date this year. So what it kind of proves to us, Susan, is somebody who says I can pick the most favorable stocks in the S&P 500, they might get it right once, they might even get it right twice, but they're not consistently going to be right. You know, what's going to be the leader? And that's Warren's point. You have hedge fund managers and other active managers are really trying to beat the index over a longer period of time. It's very, very difficult, if not impossible.
Yeah.
So we're betting on another gambler's prediction.
Well, that, in a way, they are. I mean, it is a gamble, and then that's what these guys were. They've been bearish on the markets for a couple of years now, and they've just keep doubling down, and they've been wrong, and it's certainly affecting their outcome.
Well, it's nice to know that they're human, too, because, you know, if you believe in the Illuminati theory, like there's a very tiny percentage of people that are controlling everything, including the markets. Some people think that the larger a hedge fund manager gets, and the largest, their actions affect the market because other people will follow suit. And if they're losing, that proves that's not true.
Yeah, and I think it just gets down to the point that this business is not about being right predicting outcomes. It's just, Kevin, there's just no empirical data over the last 70, 80, however many years that's ever worked. And so I think you get back to the basics. You get back to believing in the strategy. You decide on a strategy. It makes sense for you, and you stick with it. And over time, that seems to do better.
All right. Well, to end the market update, markets are still up, so it's definitely an update that we've had here with Kingston Wealth Management, Kevin Kingston and John Rudy. We're going to come back with part two and part three of our conversation today, including reasons you won't retire on time and what a financial wellness program is, and do you have one? I bet the answer is you need one. We'll get to that and more coming up here on WJBC.
Yeah.
ABC.com. 10:24, almost 10:25. As I was reminding Kevin and John, they might be getting a call from me this week if I win either the Mega Millions or the Powerball, because they're both over $300 million, that I want their help in relocating me to Puerto Rico until I turn in the ticket, because I want to save all that tax funding. But just remember, when they say always check with your financial advisor first should you win such a mega lottery prize, these would be the guys you'd be calling. That is a service that they offer, and you wouldn't be the first lottery winner who had called them.
No, it happens. It's just not one of those things you want to bank on too quickly. But it does happen. We all know people who've won.
Now, we've all joked that that's our retirement plan, but we need a better one.
We need
so
a better
let's
one.
Start with three reasons you won't retire on time with Kevin Kingston and John Rudy with Kingston Wealth Management.
You know, we hear people all the time talk about picking out a time, Kevin, that they want to retire and that they think they're going to retire. And there's sort of three things that may be derailing that, and I want to just hit them quickly. The first one is if you start saving late and you're not compensating for that, there's a really great mathematical exercise in this deal, Kevin, that talks about it, and we might talk about it in a minute, but that's a problem that you see, isn't it? I mean, if you're late into the game, there are ways that you can catch up, but it takes a lot of discipline and a lot of sacrifice.
I think that's the right answer, John, and I would also say it's never too late. You know, may your goals, the time frame may change mm-hmm. dramatically, but it's not too late. I mean, you can start if you haven't started in the past, you can start today and at least accumulate something. The catch-up provision,
right?
I think you wanted to touch on.
Yeah.
So that today, if you're 55 older, you can contribute 24,000.
Right.
So.
Which, I mean, and they give an example, Susan. It says,
sorry, I misspoke. I said 55. 50 is correct.
You're right. Yeah. You're right. They give an example. Say you're 52 with the goal of retiring at 67. And you don't have any savings, I mean, which many, many Americans don't have. This example says if you max out your 401k at $24,000 a year that Kevin just spoke about for the next decade and a half, and your investments deliver a relatively conservative amount, and they use 6%, which I don't think is a bad number, you'll go from having no money set aside from retirement to having $558,000 in a nest egg. And that's probably enough that they talk about, Kevin, that can salvage that retirement. So I think it speaks to the fact that there are mechanisms out there to do it, but boy, it takes a ton of discipline to.
When you mentioned at age 67, John, I think that's a good point also, because so many Americans think in terms of retirement at 65, but
right.
the maximum, not the maximum, but the full Social Security benefit may not yeah. be available to you until you're 66
right.
or 67, so it's not a bad target date anyway.
Living expenses being too high, Kevin, is always an issue when you start spending entire paychecks. You've talked about the importance of folks not feeling like they have to live in overbuilt homes, things of that nature. It all adds up when you're really trying to get to that retirement date if you're outliving your means.
Most of the time we see income change in retirement, whatever your current income is today. You may have less during retirement, not always, but it behooves you to look at what those expenses are, see if the things that you were paying for during working years are still affordable during retirement years.
Last but not least, before we go to break, Kevin, and this is one we talk about all the time, and it's you don't have a plan. Many workers pick an age that sounds right for retirement without giving it much thought. We look at that all the time. I know you look at that with Mike, Chris. That's an issue when you don't have that roadmap about how to get to where you're going to get from now till retirement time. It just doesn't happen magically.
Well, one thing that resonates, I think, John, when we're talking with people, you can calculate in your head, okay, my expenses this year are this much, and my income is this much, and maybe even the next few years. But when you're trying to look at it long term, 20, 30 years perhaps of retirement, it's mm-hmm. very difficult to just do mental math. You know, using some great software like you mentioned, Chris, Mike,
right.
and our firm uses, really makes a difference in being able to add an inflation factor that looks at what my expenses may look like over the next 10, 20, 30 years, some return factor
yeah.
that you mentioned to income.
Yeah.
And having a plan of your time. Of what you're going to do that's
Absolutely.
Going to give you a purpose.
Yep.
I've run into two locals lately who I asked, hey, how are you enjoying your retirement? Because I knew that I'd retired in the last year.
Right.
And they said, I've slept in enough, and
yeah.
I need some reason
Time to get out
to
again.
Get up and go. David Letterman just came out of retirement.
I saw that.
He said, number one thing you should do if you retire and plan on spending more time with your family, you should check with your family first
right.
on whether or not that's
yeah.
what they also want.
Might,
so he's going back to TV.
Might take him a couple months just to shave that beard. I saw him. He was sitting in the stands I saw the other day.
It's now his signature.
Yeah.
Still to come with this hourly show every Wednesday with Kevin Kingston and John Rudy, sponsored by Kingston Wealth Management. Still to come, a financial wellness program. Do you have one? What is it? Can we get you one? How much will it cost me? All of those questions will be answered coming up on WJBC. Hey, thanks so much, Greg Hobble. I'm Susan Saunders, and our friends from Kingston Wealth Management are here on Wednesdays. That's Kevin Kingston, John Rudy. Sometimes we meet some of the other crew, Mike Flaherty and Chris Rudy, and I know you just got a new person at the front desk
yeah.
who's answering those phone calls when people call and say, hey, I got a question that we can't answer on the radio, or I want to make an appointment. You told me it was free, the first appointment. It's absolutely true.
You're correct.
What's that number they're going to call, and who are they going to talk to?
They can reach us at 663-9477, Susan, or Kingston Wealth Management. .net. And you're right. We've had, I think, Kevin, the last couple months, last 3 or 4 months, it seems like people are ready to make some moves. And we've heard a lot from your listeners, and we appreciate that. So, and we're always glad to help and answer questions. It doesn't always, it's certainly, as you know, Kevin, there's not any pressure. A lot of times people just want to come in and get a second opinion and say, hey, this is what I got.
That's
Would you
correct.
Guys take a look at
it? If we can point somebody the right direction, that's always good to be
It really
helpful.
Is. It really
I also appreciate the way that you have the financial calculators on the website that do not require me to give up all my personal information that you could then use to
That's
contact
right.
me or to ask questions I may not be ready for yet. You're just providing a free of charge financial calculator I may not have realized would give me so much more information right there. So.
Yeah, it's really, it's a good website.
Thank you.
So we're on to our hot topic today. Do you have a financial wellness program? I don't know if that's covered in my insurance plan, but I bet it's a high deductible.
Well, you know, one of the things we talk about, and I think Barb Nathan even talked about it last week when we had her on as a guest, that wellness, a lot of times people, Kevin, think about in terms of health, physical health, but there is a wellness component to retirement planning, and participants nowadays, obviously everybody wants that 401k and that part of their paycheck invested. But the one thing that more and more is happening is folks are looking for more help, Kevin, and I think that's what companies are being asked to do.
Well, now, Susan, you just spoke to those free calculators are helpful. You can go on our website and many others, and as you said, some websites want all of your personal data. Ours doesn't require any.
You're not data mining, which is makes me feel good about my privacy.
Exactly. And to John's point, we are seeing that. We get more questions from 401k participants who want more assistance. They really want advice. So some employers are responding to that, trying to make available some resources.
Charles Schwab just did an interview, or a survey, I should say, and it said 46% of the people wanted more help that they had reached out. Excuse me. And 43% wanted assistance in determining what age can I afford to retire. 39% listed they wanted help figuring out what their expenses would be in retirement. These are things that you talk about all the time. And I think corporate America, when you're starting to compete for employees, are starting to look at, hey, maybe we need to do more than just providing a 401k plan or a benefit plan that's more vanilla. This is starting to think out of the box.
And you are seeing especially large employers that are providing financial wellness, and we're also seeing some mid-size companies that do that as well, John.
You know, I think, Kevin, one of the things that we've mentioned before, and I think it goes without saying, when you have a company, when you're trying to replace an employee, you lose an employee, somebody that's been valuable to the company, that comes at a tremendous cost. And I think what I think some companies are out there, Susan, figuring out is that if you can provide some things that may not be all that costly to do, it might keep that employee from looking to greener pastures across the street, across town. And I think that retention, Kevin, is something. I know you have a lot of corporate clients. That's an issue that they're all grappling with right now.
Well, and I think, John, employees, when an employer says we're going to provide some education, financial wellness programs, if you will, to assist you, I think it's just another sign that an employer cares about this person and not just for what they can gain from an employee, but they care about the kind of the holistic approach. You know, how's that employee really doing financially? So anything that an employer moves forward, I think, to provide that outreach or assistance is usually well received.
Yeah, no question. You know, the one of the other areas I wanted to talk about too is excuse me, financial literacy. We talk about literacy all the time, Kevin, as it is more from a purely educational standpoint. But financial literacy is an area where people, even on this show, and I think, Susan, you're good at reminding us sometimes when we talk about terms, we talk about things, it's easy for us to understand because we deal with all the time. But I think companies that are trying to provide their employees with a better understanding of what some of these things are, long-term care insurance, what it means to do a few things, that literacy is understanding those things are a huge deal for people to really, once in their lifetime, really understand, oh, that's what they're talking about. I understand that.
And there's many, many resources, John, as you know, for those things. But I think a lot can be gained when an employer provides some of that in a workplace.
Yeah, no question about it.
Sorry, I did have to do the microphone there. I was busy looking at my 401k stock deferrals, and I was like, has it been a good year? It's like, yeah, it's been a good year right there. I just wanted to, they had the app. 10:44, we're going to come back with a couple of more comments from Kevin Kingston and John Rudy about financial wellness programs and small businesses that might be able to help you out in this direction. We've got all of that and more coming up here on WJBC. AM 12. I'm Kevin Kingston, John Rudy, wrapping up our hour-long discussion, which happens every Wednesday. We always hope you'll tune in here on WJBC about market news, financial news, retirement planning. We are talking about a financial wellness program, and I appreciate financial literacy. Sometimes I'll double-check on terminology just for our audience to catch up. There are small businesses offering some help in this area.
One of the things I think, as Kevin knows, I think plan sponsors are always trying to lower their fiduciary risk, Kevin, and sometimes putting programs like this into place can help that. It's not always going to be the case, but I think companies are always looking for ways to mitigate that fiduciary risk in plans, and I think when you start doing things for employees like improving literacy, letting them understand, like, terminology, what a vesting schedule is. And I think a lot of people just take for granted that people know all these things, and young employees, uninformed employees, don't know these things. And so I'm glad to see companies taking a more active, proactive role in that.
We see that regularly, John. People are usually very good at whatever their occupation mm-hmm. happens to be, but their knowledge about other things may not be that broad. So when an employer takes the steps to provide some informal or formalized education in the mm-hmm. workplace, it really goes a long way.
It really does.
You mentioned when we started, how much do I need to save? What are my expenses going to be? Then you get into the things that you just mentioned, like vesting schedule. Mm-hmm. What is that? How does it work? Some of that that may seem routine or basic to some employees may mean nothing to some other employees that really need that assistance.
No question.
The other thing I wanted to touch on, John, when we were talking about what plan sponsors can do, we mentioned if you're age 50 or above, you can defer $24,000 a year in 401ks. Sometimes for mid to higher income earners, that may not even be enough. Mm-hmm. If I haven't saved in my early years and now I'm 50, 55, 60, and I really need to sock some funds away, we're seeing some employers sponsor what are referred to as non-qualified plans that can be kind of stacked on top of a 401k or qualified retirement plan. It gives employees another way to defer income that will be taxed later.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't want to overlook that because we're seeing far more use of that. When you look at the cost of retirement, if you haven't accumulated some money already and now you're in mid-50s to 60s, it's going to take some significant savings to get there.
No doubt about it. And there's so many folks, Susan, that we've mentioned before, and I've said this and I'll say it again. When you see somebody walk out of a meeting and for the first time they really get a feel for where they're at, and sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not good, but knowing is always good. And I think that's the key.
Yeah, that's it. Being informed is better than being in the dark.
I mean, just pulling their covers over your head, hoping that things are going to get better over mm-hmm. the next two or three decades, it's just not the way to approach it. And so it clearly does help out there. Hey, I want to ask you a quick question. Interest rates, we didn't talk about that a little bit, Kevin. We know we've had a little bit. The Fed's moved on short-term interest rates this year a little bit.
10-year treasuries, the auction was very strong today after the Korean tensions. And you know, as I might have mentioned, the 10-year bond's currently about 2.2, 2.25, mm-hmm. which is down almost a quarter percent this morning.
And I think that's, Susan, a lot of that is a result of when you have these global conflicts, you have foreign investors looking at where's the most stable, safe harbor. United States always comes to the top of the list, and so you get that influx of folks looking at investing in
when you mentioned maybe off air, John, it appears that you know this low interest rate environment, it's going to continue.
Yeah,
I mean,
long
term, just another sign that interest rates are low and probably will continue to be.
Well, it's good news for folks. And Kevin talked about the 10-year bond, because that 10-year bond for many, many years has been sort of that predictor of what the 30-year mortgage rates are going to be, the long-term mortgage rates are going to be. And, Kevin, they're still very, very good. 30 years are at 4% or under. So
another sign there, John, the 2-year Treasury auction, I think this morning was around 1.3. Mm-hmm. So if you buy a 2-year Treasury, you're going to get a 1.3 yield. Sometimes we hear people talk about CD rates. Well, if the 2-year Treasury is 1.3, CD rates are not going to be
very good.
Significantly more than that.
I remember, talk to John, talk to Kevin, talk to Chris, talk to Mike, called Jenna. Talk to Kingston Wealth Management for financial planning, investments, life insurance, retirement planning, wealth preservation, employee benefit planning. You got a small business and need somebody to teach you how that works, education savings plans, and so much more. Learn more at KingstonWealthManagement.net or John Rudy. Call what number?
663-9477.
We appreciate many years of you sponsoring this segment, which helps us all learn, including myself.
A lot of fun.
We'll see you again next week on WJBC. Securities offered through Valmark Securities, Inc., member FINRA. SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through Valmark Advisors, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor. Kingston Financial Group, Incorporated is a separate entity of Valmark Securities, Inc. and Valmark Advisors, Inc., and past performance does not guarantee future results.